The Sound of Hockey episode 232. We're calling this one the Andy-eyed episode, and I'm not going to kick it to you, John, to tell us why we're calling it that like we normally would. This will be a little bit of a challenging episode for us. I'm going to go ahead and predict that now. Our plan is to talk through what has happened with Andy here over the last few days, and then we'll give some updates, and we will go from there. And we promise, A, that we are probably going to blubber and break down a little bit because it's been a hard few days for John and myself, but eventually we will get to some hockey talk because that's what Andy would want, and that's what we're going to do, and the show must go on. So that's our plan. Stick with us. If you don't want to hear the kind of tougher, more emotional part, that's okay. You can either, well, just not listen to this one, or you can skip ahead. I promise we'll get to hockey talk eventually. So, but yeah, thanks for joining us, everybody. This is Sound of Hockey. I am Darren Brown, at Darren Fun Brown on the Twitter, joined as always by John Barr. Hello, John.
Hello, everybody. I'm NHL2 Seattle on the Twitter.
And also follow us at Sound_Hockey on the Twitter, where you'll get all of your Kraken news. And we've been updating on Andy from there as well. Also, you can find out, well, we'll talk all about it. There's a lot of places that you can get information about what's happening with Andy. So we're going to start with a 5-star review, which we love to do. We have one from North Bend Wastewater Guy. It says, newbie, 5 stars, being new to the world of NHL hockey since the Kraken arrived in Seattle. This pod really helps me understand the game better. I appreciate the level of professionalism mixed with some humor. I really, in all caps, really enjoy John's tweets of the week. So, all right. Well done.
Okay.
Well right. done, John.
We know what he means by that.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for the 5-star review. Really appreciate that. And... now, do we just get into it? Do we just dive into it?
We got to do it.
Rip the Band-Aid off?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's probably some people listening to this podcast that don't actually know what happened. But if you've been paying any attention on Twitter, if you watched the Kraken game tonight, you may have seen some information about Andy, our good friend. So at the game on Saturday, I'll kind of walk you guys through what happened. It was just before the anthems started. I didn't even know anything was going on, even though I sit 10 seats away from Andy. I had no idea anything was going on. Zach Pagans and I think Katie Spence went running behind me. They'd worked for the Kraken. They went running behind me. I didn't think anything of it. I thought they were just like doing some team business or something. And Mike Benton came back from doing his pregame show on the radio, and he said, hey, I heard a call for a medical emergency up here in the press box. And, you know, it looks like it's down by Andy's chair, but I don't know. I can't see who it is. So I was like, oh, okay. So I stood up and walked over to try to see what was going on. And that's when I realized it was actually Andy, who was down on the floor, and he was clearly in a bad state. There were paramedics there. Paramedics got there within seconds, largely because Zach and I believe Katie went sprinting out to find help right away. And in retrospect, I am very, well, I shouldn't say thankful, but there's something about the fact that it happened just before a game at Climate Pledge Arena where paramedics were there to help him right away, that I think at least gives hope, right, as far as prognosis. So really thankful for everybody that kind of sprung into action there. We did learn eventually that he suffered a stroke, so it was a big deal. He was taken away by an ambulance. I went down to the concourse and saw him leave, and he and I made eye contact for a second. And then John, you and I, I called you. I remember you saying you usually don't look at your phone during games. So I was like, how do I even get in touch with John? So I messaged you and just said, hey, it's an emergency. And thankfully, you did happen to see that. For some reason, you called me right away. So you came running up. We were able to get in touch with Andy's brother, who lives down in San Francisco, just because by happenstance, you, John, are Facebook friends with him. So, you know, that was a good thing. Sent him off in an ambulance. And that was the last that we've seen Andy to this point. So the current prognosis, we don't really know anything yet. This is several days later now. We're recording on Tuesday. He's been still in the ICU. There have been some, I'd call them positive, very small progressions here over the last 24 hours. He has opened his eyes. He's responded to some commands, moved his hands and feet, things like that. So I think that's a, like I said, positive signs, but we don't know too much yet in terms of long-term extent of this. But yeah, so it's been a weird couple of days for sure. I have myself, I've been very, very emotional over it. Probably more so than I ever would have expected myself to be. But man, Andy is such a good, good friend and a good person, and he doesn't deserve any of this. And so seeing a friend go down like that and watching it happen, you know, firsthand, it was tough. So lots of good is coming out of it in a way. And I think we'll probably talk about that in a moment. But John, I just want to say I'm thankful that you answered your damn phone, even though it was during a game.
Well, you know, it's been a really tough time, you know, and we couldn't really share much because we were respecting a lot of what the family, what their kind of communication plan was, so to speak. And we wanted to follow their lead and respect what they wanted to share. And, you know, it's been tough for us. And, you know, Andy is, you know, I think of him as this amazing friend that's been on this journey with me. And I don't think people realize how much he's done for the hockey community. I mean, I think people do, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of people that don't, you know, like the Seattle Thunderbirds community, you can tell everybody from that area loves Andy. The Kraken organization has been outstanding and constantly wanting to hear updates and asking what they can do. You know, and that's a testament to what Andy is too, right? Yeah. To those organizations, those communities. But Andy, you know, like I want to go back. I met Andy in 2013. I was moderating a panel that Andy was on. So this is 2013 in like July of 2013 at the Angry Beaver. And there was four people on the panel. And Andy, you know, it was the first time I met Andy. I knew Andy because he was writing about the Seattle Thunderbirds. And, you know, he literally created a career for himself because he loved hockey.
Yeah.
And he was writing about hockey and he became this like kind of expert about the Seattle Thunderbirds. And he took it, you know, he didn't make a lot of money on it, right? It was more of a labor of love to learn a craft. And he's created this amazing, you know, he was the hockey media when there was no hockey media, right? Nobody was talking about hockey here, but he was. He was talking about Seattle Thunderbirds and he took it seriously, even though, you know, the pay was very, very small, right? But he took it seriously and put in the work. You know, you got to respect that. And so I've always appreciated about that. But, you know, Andy's, I mean, I can't tell you how many hours I've talked, you know, you've heard, a lot of the listeners have heard him every week and we talk about it. You know, for every hour you hear every week, you know, Darren and I are talking to him like 5 to 10 hours all about hockey during the week, you know, at least.
Yeah.
And I share the story. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've called him in the middle of the day to get clarity on some, you know, what is an overage rule or what is a, you know, a late birthday, those kind of things that are kind of commonplace in the junior world that he would help explain. But, you know, we'd spend 5 minutes, 10 minutes talking about that. And then we'd spend another 2 hours talking about hockey. And it's just crazy to have such a constant in your life and then him not being available right now, right? And he's got a long road in front of him. And that's a best case scenario, right? And we're all rooting for him. And I want to thank the community, the hockey community at large. That's people in the Sound of Hockey community. That's people in the Seattle Thunderbirds community. That's people in the Kraken community. It's media from all over North America, right? You know, Chris Peters had some great things to say about him. Jeff Merrick, Brendan Batchelor, John Forslund. You know, like it just goes on and on about how much people love Andy and are rooting for Andy. And that's Andy who created that, right? Yep. Because he's, I mean, I would always joke around and make fun of him when he would get mad because his mad is like volume 1 or 2, you know,
yeah.
Like he just doesn't get mad. But when no. he gets mad, it's not that mad.
And he is truly like, you know, you hear people described as like, oh, he's like a big teddy bear. Like there is nobody fits that description better than Andy Ide, who all he wants to do is just have a laugh and talk hockey. That's all the man wants to do. Not a mean bone in his entire body. That's and he is just, yeah. just the nicest guy you can meet. And so, you know, folks listening at home or wherever you're listening from, if you're just hearing this, I'm sorry that we had to even break this news to you. To your point, John, where we were holding off on really sharing it publicly. It's interesting because people keep looking at to us, right? Because they know that we do this podcast yeah. together. They know that he writes for Sound of Hockey. But to your point, there's so much more to Andy, and he is so much more to the hockey community than just what he's done with and for us. He is you know, he's currently writing for NHL.com. He's writing for Seattle Sports. He's going on radio shows all the time. Like, he's everywhere in the hockey community. And part of me is kind of honored that people are looking to us because they know that we have this relationship. But I just want people to understand, like, he is so much more to the hockey community than this little sliver of it that we have here. So, but man, so we finally got the go ahead, and we didn't even ask his family, right, if we could share anything publicly. But so his brother finally did give us a Caring Bridge website to go to, which we didn't ask for or anything. He just said, please feel free to share it. I'm not sure if he realized when he sent that to us what kind of an outpouring was going to come and how much love was going to be sent towards Andy. And I was like, hey, before I tweet this, I want to make sure that do you want to do a GoFundMe or something like that? And he's like, oh, yeah, we have one. Here's the link. And so I included that in the tweet. The tweet went bonkers. I mean, to your point, the people that were commenting and saying such nice things about Andy, it like took on a life of its own. Right. And it went to the highest levels of hockey media, hockey fandom, hockey everywhere. Anyone who's ever crossed paths with Andy had the nicest things to say. And that is a testament to who he is. So, man, it's been just flat out overwhelming to see all of this. It makes me realize how special he is to so many people and how many people he's touched along this journey. That GoFundMe has raised a lot of money, which is phenomenal. I think he probably needs a lot more help to get through this. But to those that have generously donated money, I mean, thank you from the bottom of my heart. I know that it shouldn't really come from me, but I can't tell you how grateful I am to see the generosity and the love from the hockey community. It's been unbelievable, truly unbelievable.
Yeah, and it's definitely raised a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, even if you know, not everybody is in a position to donate,
mm-hmm.
but even $10. And one thing I really love seeing is the $32.
Yeah.
Right. It's just pretty, you know, so like, you know, if you don't think you can make a dent, no problem. Donate what you can, because I love to see the number of people as well donating, which is a lot of people, right? It's not like, you know, 5 to 10 big people like donating what they can, but it's also quantity. It's a bunch of people pitching in. And I would love to see that number get even higher as far as the quantity of people. So even if you only have $10 to give, I would appreciate seeing that number grow, even that small, because enough of you that donating, it really makes a difference. And, you know, right now he's still unconscious. And I want him to see the outpouring support when he can, right?
Yeah.
When he comes out of this and when he's on the road to recovery and see how many people are behind him. You know, maybe I'm foolish to think this, but I think it'll help him, right? To see that. I know it'll help him financially, but it also to see the people and the notes and everything. So anyway, do what you can if you can.
And if not, then keep them in your thoughts. And we appreciate that too. Your point about the 32, where people are either saying $32 or $132 or whatever, just as we were about to, and the significance of that, of course, is the Kraken being the 32nd team. That's like the Kraken family is throwing that in there, right?
Yeah.
If you know, you know, kind of a thing. As we were about to record this episode and call it the Andy Eyed episode, I realized that it's episode 232, and that didn't even click in my brain until we were about to hit record on the episode. So we sure are thinking of him. It sure is weird to not have him here tonight. I know there's been times certainly where you and I have recorded without Andy, and times when Andy and I have recorded without you, and it's like, well, they'll be back next week, right? We don't know what's going to happen with Andy when he'll be back. We sure do look forward to seeing him back, though.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
Yeah.
So, but man, again, thank you times a million to everyone who has reached out. Thank you to, you know, Root Sports, put him on the Kraken broadcast tonight. The radio folks were talking about him. The Thunderbirds put a QR code to his GoFundMe up on their big screen tonight. I don't know, even like there's so many people to thank when this thing is all said and done. I don't know
the Kraken for sure. Right.
Yeah.
You know, they've really amplified, you know, the GoFundMe and the notifications and thinking about Andy.
And even people from within the, like Ron Francis made a pretty big donation.
Yeah.
Todd Lewicki made a huge donation.
Yeah.
I mean, which isn't the point, but like, just they're taking care of people in their community, and that's it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So, great to see. And by the way, if you haven't donated and you want to donate to the GoFundMe, you can just go to andyide.com. And a fun little story about that. One of our listeners reached out, and he reached out via direct message, private message. So I won't say who it is just in case he doesn't want his name out there. But I'm going to read this DM to you. He says, "Hey, all, I just saw the news on Andy's condition. I was hoping I'd be able to help in a small way. Here's a little background. At some point, you mentioned in an offhand conversation on the podcast about Andy's name not being registered as a domain. Pause for 1 second. I do not remember this at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. Okay. All right. Back to the message. He says, I purchased andyide.com at that time and had intended on building something silly with it for him to get a chuckle out of it. But I just never ended up getting around to making it happen. The hopefully helpful part, I can transfer the domain to you all to set up forwarding on the domain so it would forward to resources to help him out. I don't know. Thanks for the podcast, and hopefully this can be helpful. I've got Andy in my thoughts." And then a few minutes later, he messages again and says, "Update. I set the domain to forward right to his GoFundMe." So, I mean, it's just that is how special our little community is to us.
Yeah.
And what a thoughtful thing, and also hilarious that some stupid thing that we came up with all these, I mean, probably years ago,
yeah.
Right?
That yeah.
We've just mentioned it in a conversation and somebody's like, "Oh, I'm going to go buy the domain and
make something silly."
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, just to make us laugh.
Right. Right.
That's right. Amazing. So, so anyway, andyide.com, that's how we have that domain because a listener just decided to do something incredible there. So thank you. If you go to andyide.com, that'll direct you right to his GoFundMe and you can donate there if you so desire. Also, you can check our Twitter at the pinned to the top of it. There's a link to his Caring Bridge site so you can see updates from his brothers and from his family each day. So they'll be keeping people posted there on how he's doing. So thinking about you, Andy. Listeners are certainly thinking about you. And yeah, thanks, everybody. We're gonna move on to some Kraken talk now because I think that's what Andy would want to do. So let's do that. So we have three games to talk about. The first one, and believe it or not, and I have felt like the vibes around the team haven't been that high. But if you think about it, since our last recording, they're actually 2-1. So it's like, okay, that's not bad, but it has been feeling like a little bit of desperate times where you're like, we need them to get some wins here.
Yeah.
Like they're in the playoffs, they're comfortably in the playoffs, but also how long are we going to be in this little doldrums that we've been in for quite a while here? So anyway, the first game was about against San Jose. Didn't go the way that I think anybody would have wanted it to go. It felt a lot like the previous time they played San Jose through two periods where it was just like not much happening offensively. James Reimer, who has shown himself
to
be...
They look like evenly matched teams.
Yeah, right? Evenly matched teams, which you want them to run the San Jose Sharks out of the building. They stink this year, right?
Yeah, they stink out loud.
For some reason, James Reimer has their number. He also has proven in the last week that he's a total jerk. That's a separate discussion that we probably won't have tonight. But
right.
So the score finally gets opened with a penalty shot by rookie William Eklund, who scores against Philip Grubauer. That's the only goal that Grubauer gave up all night. And then you're kind of like, oh my God,
they're going to lose.
Same
this.
Thing. Yeah. It's the same as the last game, right? They're down 1-0. I was just waiting for the Sharks to get the next one. And then
and they had lost the prior three, right? Yep. So you're kind of, you can imagine they're squeezing their sticks a bit.
And in all different ways, right? Yep. All three of those games were totally different. And so you go to San Jose, you're playing a crappy team and same thing. You can't get anything going. And then all of a sudden, in a blink of an eye, Yanni Gourde makes this insane pass, 150-foot pass to Oliver Bjorkstrand, sends him in a breakaway and Bjorkstrand scores. And you're like, I don't know if you felt this, John, but me watching at home, I was like, whew, like, thank goodness for that one.
Yeah,
right? Like they needed that so badly. And then they get to overtime and Bjorkstrand again comes through. He sets up Vince Dunn for the goal and Vince Dunn had a huge celebration. So that I thought Vince Dunn's celebration was a pretty good representation of how the players probably felt to get that win. Cause it was huge relief, right? Just thank goodness.
Yeah, for sure. And it was, I was expecting a rout and they just didn't look like the team that we expected them to be.
Yeah.
So
I asked Ellie Tolvanen about it the next day, what it is to, because they came back and practiced actually on Friday, but what it is about that building and playing against Reimer and whatever. And he gave credit to the Sharks. He said they actually play a really tight defensive structure. And sometimes when you get to this point in the season, it gets a little bit tough because when you play against bad teams, they have no pressure.
Right.
So they play loose, right? They're just... out there to win. And you think back to last year,
yeah,
the Kraken were
yeah.
winning some games at yeah. the end of the year that you thought they had no business winning, right? And that was when we really, I mean, we really developed a lot of respect for a lot of the players and for Hackstall at that point. 'Cause it was like, these guys don't quit.
Yeah.
You know, so I think there's probably something to that. By the way, I wanted to do a pretty detailed practice report involving Tolvanen and Bjorkstrand. I had really good conversations with both of them and then realized that I hadn't hit record on my recording device. So I didn't oops. Have their quotes in my practice report, which was quite disappointing.
Oops.
But yeah. Oops, indeed. Greater tragedies. I was able to give kind of the general idea of what happened there. So they got the win. Philip Grubauer made 31 of 32 saves, had a really, really good game. Bjorkstrand was certainly I thought he was the star of that one, although Vince Dunn got the game winner. Next game, Edmonton. I will admit, with everything that went on there that we talked about at the top of the show, I wasn't super attentive on this one. I did remain at the building and I was watching from the second period on, but I don't know. I don't really know what happened in that game. I was watching and 10 minutes after I was like, I have no idea what happened in that game. I was just yeah. so distracted. And but I've since gone back to figure out what happened. I do recall that it wasn't a great day for the goalies, plural. Philip Grubauer had given up a couple of tough ones early, and then he left in the middle of the game somewhat mysteriously, got replaced by Martin Jones. They announced eventually, the Kraken initially announced that he had a lower body injury and then changed it and said that he was sick. So I think that was just a miscommunication, but so Jones comes in, gets scored on the first shot he faces. That game ends up 6-4 and, you know, just not a...
Well, and the Kraken really offensively played pretty well.
They didn't have a bad game, 37 shots.
And, yep. and I'm not saying they should have won that, but it's kind of one of those things where it's like the score was closer than it showed.
The game was closer than it showed. Yeah. yeah, sure. Yep.
But like that, I don't know if that's a cop-out or what, and you never know that... The one thing I haven't liked is the Kraken allowing the first goal, and that was the fifth game in a row where they allowed
and it was very early, kind of like a last yeah, year type yeah. of game.
I mean, then the only one they won in that stretch was the San Jose one.
Yeah.
So that was actually their best game, I think, in the last stretch, and we'll get to the Dallas game because not including that one from tonight. But I thought the Edmonton game was the best game they actually played. Right? Yeah. You could maybe say goaltending could have been a little bit better, but you know, you're also the guys that scored. What was it? It was
Kane had three goals.
Kane,
Evander Kane, McDavid scored, and
Yamamoto, I think, had one.
Okay, that sounds right.
And maybe is there one other one?
I don't know. I don't want to think about all the goals.
Okay.
Scored,
anyway, so it was like it wasn't like fluky goals. That's I guess my point is like goal scorers were scoring.
Yeah.
So.
The other thing about this game, John Hayden got called up last week, which was kind of weird because they already had three healthy scratches. So like adding another one, they didn't make a corresponding move. So they just were like effectively adding an extra player. And then he went out and in that first game, he got in a fight with Klim Kostin. They were like spinning around. He went down and folded his leg under himself and went off gingerly. And now it looks like he's done for the season. He had surgery on his legs.
Done for the regular season.
Right. It's 12 weeks.
That's right.
So if they make it to, I actually was trying to do the math on this today too. If they make it to effectively like the Stanley Cup final, then he might be available.
He might draw in.
Yeah. I don't know for sure, but I went back and watched the replay and it really looked like when he tried to stand up, his right leg wasn't working right. If you know what I mean. It just looked.
When he kind of like, I think he like acknowledged to the ref, he's like, I've got a problem here. I need to go in.
Yeah, but
and
like
he skated off on his own.
If you look at his leg, though,
yeah,
it doesn't look
functional.
Right. Yeah,
yeah.
So I don't know. It just
and just going back a little bit to talk about, you talked about him getting called up and no kind of corresponding move.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, because it's post trade deadline, I don't know if we've ever covered this, but there's no roster limit, and so they can keep more than 23 people on the roster, and so that's why they didn't have to do a corresponding move. They still need to be cap compliant, so you can't just add like 10 players because you probably would not be cap compliant at that point. But that's just a educational piece that I didn't even know until like last year, so
yeah.
I'm just sharing that.
Yep, no, it's a good call. I did think it was interesting that they added him. When you think about it, they were carrying two defensemen and one forward, which is not how most
pretty
teams
rare.
Do it, right?
Yeah.
Usually teams will go two forwards and one defenseman. They've clearly been hesitant to put right shot defensemen on waivers. So like last year, they wouldn't send Borgen down, right? They just kept scratching him. Same thing this year with Cale Fleury. They've gotten him into a couple games when guys have been hurt. But then they got Jacob Megna too. And so clearly they don't want to put these guys on waivers. So now it's an opportunity for them to get somebody into the lineup who brings some physicality and that kind of a game. But unfortunately, he came up and immediately got hurt, which is unfortunate. I said unfortunately and then unfortunate, but you know what I mean. Okay, so the Dallas game most recently, and these Dallas Stars, man, they have had the Kraken's number for the last week and a half here. Weird that they are playing each other for the third time in like a week and a half. It ends up with a 5-4 overtime win, and man, I needed that one tonight. I needed it. I needed a good victory, good feeling victory, and so I'm thankful that the Kraken delivered it. Joey DeCord got called up, so speaking of call-ups, Grubauer, we mentioned he left halfway through the Edmonton game with an illness. They recalled DeCord on emergency basis. I did think it was a little interesting. I don't know if you thought this, John, that he got called up and not Chris Drieger. What did you think about that?
That didn't really cross my mind. I really believe DeCord has earned an opportunity. He's played extremely well literally the last 2 years in the AHL with very little opportunity in the NHL. He's had some. Right, he's technically undefeated, I think, this year.
That's true.
He won Calgary.
He's given up like five goals or something. Yeah. But
I do think, you know, we've kind of talked to Joey about this. Is like he just needs opportunities right now in the NHL to like feel that kind of pace, and I don't know the extent of the Calgary game, but he even alluded to it post game tonight about how at least he wasn't rushed into net.
Yeah,
right. He was told that he was going to play right away, more than 24 hours, and he was traveling with the team.
Yeah, because the team also did team bonding, I believe, in Coachella Valley.
Yeah.
Because they were all putting out pictures on Instagram at the Indian Wells tennis tournament. They were playing golf down there. And actually, I know they were there because they had practice scheduled for Coachella Valley.
Yeah.
So pretty cool, by the way, if they did that.
Yeah.
So then they must have just scooped him up on the way, right?
Like, hey, on the plane. By the way, you got a flight. Yeah. You got to join us. But I don't know if listeners remember, but the story about his start in Philadelphia last year, I believe, or New Jersey. I forget which.
I think it was New Jersey, yeah.
But it was like crazy. Like he literally arrived and went right into the video review of the team, and he was playing that night. It's nice for him to give it like a little bit of a buffer and the opportunity to kind of like have a normal start. You know, the tricky thing with DeCord is I think he's referred to as a group six free agent, UFA.
After the season.
Where normally if he'd been playing in the NHL, he would have been still an RFA, but he's probably going to go UFA, which means more than likely he signs with another team. We're very pro Joey DeCord podcast.
It's true.
And so it was nice to see. I didn't really think much of the Drieger versus DeCord. I mean, I think in a way you bring Drieger up now, it's a little bit of a distraction because people kind of go like, well, is he going to be the starter?
Yeah.
I'm not even sure if he's ready, right?
He's only played, I think, six games down there.
Yeah. So I think his rehab is going well, and I think it's encouraging, but we don't know how he's going to do in the NHL. Meanwhile, Joey's been playing extremely well, and I'm always amazed at Hakstol's ability to like rattle off like some of these AHL guys like track record in the AHL. Like it makes me think he's either given a cheat sheet right before the game, like, hey, this is the talking points about Joey DeCord in his last five games, because he's like, I don't think he's allowed more than two goals in a game in the last five, and he's 5-0, and it's an, you know, that's the most important, you know, aspect of a goalie. And you're like, how does he even have time to pay attention to that?
Well, you got to think that there's a conversation too. Like I know when, well, I don't know, but I would think that behind the scenes, if they're making a call up, it's not entirely just the front office making that call, right?
I totally agree. Because there's no way Hakstol's like really up to speed on both of them, right? And he's got to kind of at least have some people that know the team really well.
Yeah.
Whether it be, you know, the coach in AHL, the GM, or who knows, right? So I agree.
So anyway, DeCord did play well. He gave up four goals in the end, but he had a terrible bounce to start the game. He had one where he was completely hung out to dry, and then he had a rebound on a tying goal with 0.7 seconds left that Jamie Benn got away with a total cross check, but I kind of get why it happened. But like that tying goal happened entirely because of the cross check too, right?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Vince Dunn was about to clear the puck and he cross checks him in the back, knocks him down, and then scores.
He's all alone, right? Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. that, like any other time in the game, I think that probably gets called. But because it's 0.7 seconds left and they're trying to get a tying goal, that doesn't get called. So anyway, we might circle back to that one in a moment. But it was a pretty fun game to watch. I will say that if there was a bleep horn in my house for the amount of cursing that happened after that 0.7 second tying goal happened, the bleep horn would have been working overtime because I was very angry in that moment. I just, like I said, I needed a win tonight just for my own personal being. So
I needed it too. Yeah. But my reaction was like pass out, right? Where I literally like flopped back in my couch. Yeah. Like I laid down, like looking at the ceiling, just yeah. Like, no, why did this have to happen?
So it was a good game, though. They had three goals by the fourth line tonight, which I thought was really encouraging. Shout out to Eddie Olczyk for calling before the game that there was going to be a goal or two for Daniel Sprong. He went out and had a goal and an assist in the first, like, what, 7 minutes of the game or something. And then Tanev ended up getting a second goal later in the game, which you thought that one was going to be the dagger.
Yeah.
Because that made it 4-2 in the third period. Fantastic pass by Morgan Geeky to set that one up. But they give up a response goal, sort of, but Hakstol has a brilliant challenge on this one. I thought if you looked at it, man, this was gutsy because first off, think about it, right? That would have made it 4-3 if the goal stood, and then they would have had the penalty if they had lost that challenge, which I still don't agree with, but that's neither here nor there. Gutsy challenge. If you look at it, Domi is in the blue paint the whole time. There is contact. There's a little, the only thing I could think where I was like, here's where they might have it go the other way. Susie gave Domi just a little bit of a shove. And I wondered if they'd be like, oh, that's what caused the contact to happen. But I thought the refs made the right call. I thought Hakstol, I thought Tim Ohashi, I thought Paul McFarland got together, made the right decision to challenge that. And it paid off.
I didn't think it was going to go our way.
Seems to, right?
No, because I think Domi even hit Joey before Susie made contact with him.
Yep. And then Susie made contact and then he touched him again, I think, is what happened.
And just kind of stayed there and wasn't like, oh, I'm going to...
Well, let me get out of this blue paint.
Try to pretend to get out of the way, right? Yeah. He like stayed there. Like there was no movement. And it was a quick review. Like I was like amazed because I'm like, this can't go our way. And all of a sudden they're reviewing and I'm like, oh my gosh, we want a challenge.
Yep. So that keeps it 4-2, right? But then they somehow managed to score again a couple minutes later. And then again in the 6-on-5, mad scramble. Kraken can't get the puck out of the zone, even though they had opportunities to do it. There was one with like 10 seconds left where Vince Dunn had the puck on his stick. And I think he thought Matty Beniers was skating towards the boards and Matty fell down or something. And so he just like passed it to nobody instead of just chipping it out of the zone. Again, 10 seconds left, right? Like just get it down the ice. Don't ice it, but just get it down the ice.
Yeah.
And then instead they tie it with 0.7 seconds left. And that was when I nearly smashed my computer. So, but man, a lot of butts for this one. Thankfully, Adam Larson scores the big cat. Fantastic goal.
Just what you expect. A stretch pass to Adam Larson.
Well, and the overtime period was pretty cool, though, because Dallas had the puck for, you know, when they've had success recently in overtime, it's been like Seattle has the puck the whole time. They play rope-a-dope. They wait for their opportunity. This one, Dallas had the puck for the first 2 minutes or whatever. They finally got a steal from, I think, Robertson. And then McCann makes an unbelievable pass up the boards, a bank pass off the boards.
Yeah.
To Larson in stride, which I don't know what he's doing up there, but and what a goal, right? Like, what a fantastic finish.
I know. It was incredible. And I didn't realize this until we started talking, like Vince Dunn, another defenseman, scoring the game-winning goal on a stretch pass in overtime in San Jose.
Yeah.
Right? So you have the defenders, like, receiving a stretch pass.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if there's some kind of strategy with the Kraken, like, nobody's going to think the defenseman's going to commit to going all in, right?
I mean, I think it's just a rotation thing. That's my thought, but I don't know. Like,
I don't know either.
You might be onto something.
So Larson was like, I understand Dunn, like that. I think Dunn had just come off the bench and Bjorkstrand had it deep and just kind of was like, saw him. It was like kind of a coincidence that it laid out that way. Larson literally had the puck behind the net, the Kraken net, and it almost looked like he was going to the bench to change and he was just getting a stretch pass. It was such a fun goal. A fun goal. And such a nice thing to kind of come back and win after kind of potentially squandering a lead. They did squander a lead.
And they needed those points. I loved his, like, Larson, the way that he went to the net too, because he had a defender on him, but he used his shin pads to kind of protect the puck and then also made a fantastic move. So awesome goal. Awesome win. Well, awesome win, except for collapsing late. I could have done without that, but we'll let the Kraken slide for getting the win. Let's go down on the farm. Moo! Ville Ottaviinen has been signed to his entry-level contract, which I think is pretty cool. He's a 20-year-old right-shot defenseman. Big kid, 6 foot, 5 inches, 210 pounds. He's had 5 goals and 11 assists in 54 games playing for JYP in the Finnish Liga. So that's the top league. Big kid.
Yeah.
20 years old.
He won't necessarily play in North America next year. He probably will. Mm-hmm. And I would expect him to be in Coachella for a bit, just to get used to kind of North American ice, North American game. So don't expect him anytime soon. But, you know, he has been at the training camps the last couple of years. And so we've been able to see him a little bit. He is a big boy.
He
right?
certainly is.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, and I know there's always a push to get more Finns. So,
yeah. Well, and you think about it, I mean, Francis and Robert Kron drafted some pretty good Finns over in Carolina, so there might be something to that. They might be trying to get more Finns into the organization. As long as we're down in the farm, the Firebirds have also clinched their playoff spot in their first season, which
shocking.
Is pretty,
yeah.
I mean, in a way it is shocking though, right? Like when you think about how they constructed this team, and I remember on free agent signing day, it was like so many guys that either you had heard of like a couple times over the years or hadn't heard about in a while, and all of a sudden they're in the Kraken organization. Like, wow, they're really piecing together whatever they can find here, you know, and that team has been fantastic. So pretty cool. I mean, incredible work from the Kraken organization to just like put that together. Yeah, there's a few of their draft picks down there, but it's few. Right. Like most of what they have down there is
few as in one, I think.
Is it? Is Riker Evans the only?
Yes, because he was a second year draft pick in 2021. Mm-hmm. So meaning he was an older draft pick. It's gone through the second time and he's old enough to play in the AHL, where a lot of the 2021 NHL entry draft players, meaning six out of the seven or however many they drafted, are still too young to play in the AHL, similar to Shane Wright.
Yeah.
Right?
And well, and they have a few guys from like expansion draft, right? Cole Lind is there, Alex True is there, Jody
and,
Cord,
and some undrafted free agents like Cartier we've talked about last week. So
Luke Henman.
Yeah. So those guys are junior players, but they are older. So it part of this why they're so good is a little bit because they don't have a lot of prospects down there. So
it's actual pros, right? It's a lot
it's like more career pros or kind of like more or older guys. Now, next year's going to be different because you're essentially going to have all those 2021 NHL entry draft players, Ottaviinen being one of them probably. Mm-hmm. So
there to develop. So yeah. We have also a little bit of CHL news, which Andy put this one on the show notes, wouldn't you know? The QMJHL is potentially banning fighting, which I think is interesting. What is the penalty if they do fight? Are they suspended automatically?
They haven't kind of released a lot of details. I mean, I think that's the, you know, when you parse it out, it's not banning. It's just going to be more severe penalties. So more suspensions potentially or suspensions in general. Part of this is going back to during COVID, a lot of these junior teams needed kind of government bailouts to stay afloat. And the governments would hold over them saying, hey, well, we don't want you to have this fighting in the league, right? We think that's inappropriate for 15, 16-year-olds to be fighting. So it's an interesting thing to think about. It's not kind of official. I think it is going to happen with the QMJHL. I'm open to it, but I'm always worried about how are you prepared to potentially fight, right? Once you get to the NHL. Mm. And you shouldn't have to fight, but we know right now it's still part of the game.
Yeah.
And so, you know, QMJHL and junior leagues are part of the development. Now you could say, well, college players.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Okay.
Exactly what I was going
to
say.
So don't get to fight.
Right.
Right.
They're automatically suspended if they fight in college.
Yeah. So maybe it's not required at that level. So like I said, I'm open to it. I think from a fan's perspective, as much as a lot of people don't think it should be in the game, I think fans still enjoy it. Doesn't mean it should be in there, but it's something to consider. And like I said, I'm open for the discussion about it.
All right. Well, I don't want to discuss it anymore right now, so let's move on.
Then we're not open to it.
And as long as we're talking about college hockey, we should mention that the Wisconsin women, I was quite thrilled to see this news. They won their seventh NCAA title in history, which is the most ever for women's hockey. Might be probably, I don't actually know if it's most versus men's. There's probably a team that's, I don't know.
Probably.
Anyway, pretty phenomenal. They beat Ohio State. I think it was 1-0 was the final score, right?
Yeah. The Ohio State, by the way.
Yeah. We don't need to do that.
Okay. What's incredible about Wisconsin is they kind of took the long route. Mm-hmm. They were a relatively lower seed, a 6 seed. You could argue that Wisconsin should never really be like an underdog in these things.
Right.
But Ohio State, like best friend of the pod, would tell us is they've been like dominant all year. They've been kind of like number one most of the season. But Wisconsin was theoretically a 6 seed, beating a 1 seed. Great game, by the way. A lot of fun. I watched some of the semifinals, which was on Friday, as well as the national title, which was on Sunday. And hopefully people don't take this the wrong way, but I really enjoy watching the women's college game because it's just a hair bit slower. So you can kind of, they're all way 100 billion times better than I am,
mm-hmm.
but I can relate to their playing because there's a little bit more space.
Okay.
A little more time. They're smaller and I'm a small person compared to the NHL game. So
I also hope people don't take that the wrong way because I think you mean that as you relate to the game more, which is supposed to be a positive thing.
Yeah, it's just and I enjoy it because I'm like, okay, I can process things just a hair easier than NHL because you look at the NHL and like if you're down close, like you won't believe how little space there is.
Yeah.
Where the women's game is just a little bit more space. In college in general is a little bit slower. So, but great game. And it's, man, I thought Stanley Cup playoffs, they throw the whistles away the last 5 minutes, but like there were some huge hits in this game. And there's no checking. There's theoretically no checking. There's a lot of rub out and kind of that kind of things, but great game. Pretty incredible. So,
all right. The NCAA men's tournament is also set. So that hasn't started yet, but it is set. The number one seeds are Minnesota, Michigan, Denver and Quinnipiac. I think it's interesting that Michigan is really good again. I know they have Adam Fantilli, who's a big prospect, and Luke Hughes. But it is interesting when you think about who they've lost, right? Over the Beniers, Owen Powers, like they've lost some very significant players out of there, and they're still.
But they've kind of been replaced by the same kind of guys, young, really high end talent.
We'll see if it works. We have a theory that doesn't really work, but we'll find out. They've obviously had a very successful season here, so. But that gets underway on the 25th of March, so keep an eye out for that. We now move on to our segments, and our first segment is John and Andy's favorite segment. It's Bad Boys.
Yes, this is a doozy.
This is a special one. Yeah, we have a special edition Bad Boys because I think the people finally almost got what they wanted, which was for somebody, speaking of fighting, right? You were just talking about, fighting, maybe we don't need. Well, people have been clamoring for somebody to finally just fight Jordan Binnington after he challenges people and seems to, you know, it's almost like a dog that has a lot of bark but no bite.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I would imagine that if he actually got in a fight, he'd probably get punched a lot. Is what I would think. So Marc-Andre Fleury tried to fight him. He skated all the way down the ice and got broken up by the linesman. The best part about it, though, is that Fleury happened to be mic'd up for this game, and the audio from it is incredible. And if you haven't seen this video, go look it up because, man, it is funny. But he's basically like, oh, come on, it'll be good, right? Like, and the refs are like, no, we're not going to let that. And he's like, oh, but it'll be fun. The crowd will get going. And then he's like, I just got to go pick up my stuff now. I'm just going to pick up my stuff. And he's got his helmet off. He's like, I don't like my hair to look like this. So it's fantastic stuff.
And what a perfect player to try to fight Bennington.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you saw it. Like, there was a couple old clips of him fighting in junior. Where he had a couple.
That's Fleury?
Fleury. Okay. Fleury knows how to fight.
Yeah.
Like, because you think of these as the super sweet individual.
Yeah.
But like, no, he, ironically, in the queue, he had two fights in the queue.
Who knew?
Yeah.
But this was funny too, because Binnington seems to pull this crap. And we've talked about this before, that he only seems to pull this crap when he's like losing. Like things are going terribly for him in the game. He'll be like, oh, I'm going to go show how tough I am. Right. That'll fix it. And then he's just like, looks like such an idiot. So I thought he again looked like such an idiot. I wish the refs would have let him go because I think it probably would have. I mean, I don't really know. Maybe Binnington knows how to handle himself too, but we've never seen it actually get there. So,
I'm not sure if you mentioned it already, but the reason why it's a bad boy is
he got suspended. I did not mention this.
Okay.
He did get suspended for his antics, 2 games. Well deserved, I thought.
Yeah.
It was like unsportsmanlike conduct and something else.
He
I think he stuck somebody in the nuts.
No, he went after Hartman with his blocker
okay.
into his face. And that's like an absolute no-no and aggressively and good on the NHL for suspending him. Right?
Yep, I agree. We now move on to our weekly. That was a good Bad Boys. I liked that one. We now move on to our weekly one-timers. Our first weekly one-timer is a little bit of a doozy as well. Fanatics is going to become the new makers of NHL jerseys starting in the 2024-25 season.
This seemed to go over well.
Yeah, this was another one of those where it's like, first off, I personally couldn't care less. I just want to make that clear. I really don't care what brand makes it. Once they stopped having actual hockey brands do it, whatever, 10, 15 years ago, and they switched to who I think it was Reebok first, which I guess they kind of were a hockey brand, and then Adidas, and then now Fanatics. But back in the day, they had Coho and CCM and stuff like that. And I thought that was really cool. And once they moved away from those and just into more like mainstream athletic brands, I was like, oh, all right, well, whatever. I don't really care who makes them then. But anyway, now it's like hockey fans are very upset about this, which I think is pretty funny.
And it's interesting. I've heard like people hate on Fanatics for a while.
Yeah.
So when I saw this announced, I'm like, oh boy.
Well, so the knock is that their quality of their products tends to not be quite as good as you'd want, I guess. Yeah. Right. And so like I saw like a lot of people were tweeting out like, oh, look at this sweatshirt I got from Fanatics, and the logo would be like upside down.
Yeah.
And the names would be spelled wrong on the jerseys and the wrong numbers and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, yeah, I kind of get that. But even, you know, if you look at like a Fanatics Kraken jersey next to an authentic one, it's like you can very clearly see the difference. So my only thought on it is like, I'm sure when Fanatics starts making the actual uniforms that the players are wearing, the quality is going to be just fine. And I'm sure they're going to have an authentic line just like they have now. But I get why people are like, why would you go with this crap brand? And the answer is
money.
So
yeah,
that answers it. At this point, like pretty much every major athletic brand has made the jerseys at some point, you know, Nike made them, Adidas made them.
This is Reebok made them. Like, who else is there? Deal too. It seems pretty long. Yeah. I don't know what the Adidas one, but I don't think it was quite 10 years. There was a funny thread on Twitter where Ryan Lambert, Two Line Pass on Twitter, said something like, you know, I really don't know what the issue is with Fanatics, why people hate it. Can you let me know? And the thread was like a flurry of like screw ups and upside down logos, misspellings of names. And then his next tweet was, I now know why people are upset about Fanatics being the official sponsor. So it was very good.
Yeah, very funny. I also, there's a tweet by, I think it was that Solu City guy, where it was like looking at NHL fighting in the future, and it was a guy just ripping a shirt off of somebody. Just like he grabs him by the t-shirt and just pulls it off.
Yeah. Right? Oh, man.
Pretty funny.
Yeah.
Our next weekly one-timer. Whoopsh. Ohio State defenseman Sophie Jakes won the Patty Kazmaier Award as the top player in women's college hockey this week. So there you go.
Yeah, she's pretty good at hockey.
We did have to debate how to pronounce that name, but it is Jakes.
I don't know if I debated it.
John knew how to pronounce it.
Well, I watched the game, so
yeah,
it was easy for me to hear that.
That's fair. I wasn't able to watch the game. I would have liked to because my alma mater was in the tournament and they won the championship, but I didn't get to watch it. Our next weekly one-timer, the PHF championship game is coming up. The Minnesota Whitecaps, my Minnesota Whitecaps, will take on
Minnesota Whitecaps.
The Toronto Six in Arizona at Mullet Arena. That's pretty cool. Coming up on Sunday at 6 o'clock Mountain Time.
Yes. Okay. So I put that in there because that's how it's advertised on the website.
All right.
Right?
Perfect.
It says Mountain Time.
Yeah.
Do you know what Mountain Daylight Time
is? Well, it could be 6 o'clock Pacific or 5 o'clock Pacific, depending on
the time of year.
Time of year, right? Isn't that how it goes?
That's correct.
Okay. So what is it currently?
It's now the same. It's Pacific time as well. So yeah.
Okay.
But this stuff drives me nuts.
I know. So what is it in Central time?
It would be 7 p.m.
Because it's
6.
Well, now
that's true. Now I'm screwed up. So yeah, so it's probably 8.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's going to be on ESPN. Check your local listings.
It's 6 p.m. Pacific, but they should put it in Eastern time.
Eastern slash, what do you think about
local time?
Nah, local time is stupid. I agree with you on that. But if
that's
it's
what it is, right?
Eastern slash, like they used to say, like
they used to say Eastern and Pacific.
Yeah,
yeah.
But see, fine. I always felt a little left out in the Central Time Zone, though. I know. I'd be like, how come they never tell
me?
Like, how come
point
I always
of our contention.
Have to do this math in my head? Like,
that's the origin story of the joke,
yeah,
right? Is
I
you
guess.
Used to complain about, and then you started all the times were communicated in Central.
Yeah.
So anyway, and then the community gets in on it, and they're communicating Central Time to me, and it's
one thing
crazy.
Leads yeah. to another, and all of a sudden, Andy Eyed has a website. So
yeah. I know, that's how it happens.
Last weekly one timer. April 17th will be the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs. May 8th will be the NHL draft lottery. So just a couple of key dates to keep an eye on there for people that care about key dates.
Well,
things.
And I've pretty much blocked my calendar after April 17th.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
From 4 p.m. to 2 a.m.
So I got invited to a trip.
Oh.
Like the very end of April. And I know. Trust me, I know. So I'm like, here's the thing. And it's just a weekend trip. And I'm like, it sounds fun. It's all my buddies, all my like college buddies. I'm like, this sounds great. I really want to go. I'm booking my flights, in fact. However, there is a strong, strong chance that if there are home games during this time, I'm not coming because I can't miss it. So
here's a little insight is that we have a friend that works for the Kraken.
Uh-huh.
That needs to go to Europe to go to the U18s.
Oh.
Pretty much mid to late April.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that stinks, but kind of the job.
Yeah, it is a job.
Yeah. Kind of required of that person,
stinks
whoever
for
that is. So.
Them.
Yeah. Okay. Those are our weekly one-timers. We now move on to our tweets of the week. I'm going to go first. I'm not convinced that you have tweets of the week, so I'm going to go first. I have a couple to share. My first one comes from JJ Watt. Football player. I thought it was kind of interesting. It's a pretty funny little thread. It starts with just a picture of him getting ready to play hockey because he grew up playing hockey in Wisconsin. And he's got a picture of his helmet, and his helmet has number 99 on it because that's his football number. Okay. Some dork retweets it and says, any dude wearing 99 in beer league is just asking to get dropped. JJ Watt. This is JJ Watt we're speaking of, right? He says, well, come drop me then. Let's see how it goes. I showed up to the rink and the NHL guys that invited me to play with them had a bag of gear for me with this helmet in it. I didn't choose it. You going to drop them too? And then some other guy said, hey, my great uncle coached you and your brother in hockey back in the day. He said you both easily could have gone pro, but your mom thought football was safer. JJ Watt retweeted that one and said, safer? No. Cheaper? Yes. Biggest barrier to entry to hockey is the expense associated with it. Soccer is the world's most popular sport in large part because of all you need is a ball. Hockey equipment is expensive. Kids constantly grow out of sizes. Ice time is scarce, etc. I just thought it was cool that JJ Watt, who is this football superstar, was having kind of a long discourse about hockey and why it's, you know, why it is tough to get into hockey for a lot of people and why it's not so accessible. I just thought it was a cool kind of like grow
full
the game.
Acknowledgement of it.
Yeah. Acknowledgement, grow the game type of a thing. He's been kind of out there lately showing that he loves hockey and grew up playing hockey. Now, I would debate this argument that he could have played pro because I have seen video of him. Now it's as an adult and he's gigantic, so he's probably lost a step or two, but he doesn't quite look like a pro hockey player to me in the videos.
Maybe at the time.
And I might get dropped by him.
And pro is a loose term.
Right.
He could be in the somewhat professional hockey league.
He's a big, tough guy, right? So he could theoretically make it in various capacities.
The coast, as they say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The cheese and toast league.
Yeah. Jeez, I've never heard that.
It's like the next, I don't think they like having it called that, but it's like the next step down, right? Because the NHL is the never hungry league, the AHL is the always hungry league, and then the ECHL is the cheese and toast league. So
I've never heard that before. Yeah. That's very good.
All right. John, do you have a tweet of the week?
I do.
Okay.
It's a simple one. It comes from the Seattle Kraken.
Uh-huh.
This is just before puck drop tonight against Dallas. It's a picture of Joey Decord and Vince Dunn, and it just says, let's mess with Texas. And I love that.
They had a funny one after the Sharks game where it was Vince Dunn very poorly photoshopped into a scene from Shark Tank, and it's saying something like, hello, Sharks, we're here looking for one more L to take a stronger share of the season series or something like that. It made me laugh. I actually have one more, an honorable mention. It comes from somebody named Matt Burke, who it looks like he designs jerseys like for fun, maybe. Or maybe he does them for real. I don't know. Anyway, he retweeted the NHL announcement about Fanatics, and it's four jerseys of Flames, Hurricanes, Avalanche, and Capitals jerseys. And they're just the most generic possible things you could imagine. It's like just a logo, like a small logo with just a word over it. And they
just
all, like they all
rebranded,
look
right? It's like
they all look exactly the same.
Yeah. That's so good. That's so good.
Oh, that's great. That is good stuff. Those are our tweets. We close the show with Sound of Hockey's 3 stars. John, your star of the week.
My star of the week is St. Louis Blue goalie Joel Hofer. Mm-hmm. Who got called up because a certain Jordan Binnington was suspended that we talked about earlier. He had 2 starts and 2 wins, would have had a shutout in a game against Winnipeg, but he had a skate issue.
Okay.
So Thomas Greiss had to come on for about a minute and then he went back on. So he had like 57 minutes of shutout hockey, but because he didn't play the whole game, he didn't
doesn't
have
officially
shutout.
Register.
So,
that's interesting.
Cool. He's a former Portland Winterhawk goalie. So really cool to see him kind of getting the call up. And we've kind of been tracking him for a while. Like we've talked about him before.
Wasn't he the goalie at like, no, I'm thinking, who was the goalie that was at Swift Current that had like 80 saves or something in a game? I don't think it was him.
It wasn't him.
We have been tracking him for a while. My star is Dylan Ferguson, who similar, I guess, reason that we've been keeping an eye on him-ish, kind of. I think he play for Kamloops, right?
He did.
In junior. Yeah. The story on him is that several years ago during the Golden Knights inaugural season 2017, he got called up in an emergency situation because all of the Golden Knights goalies in their organization were injured at the same time, which I don't know what it is about goalies in Vegas.
Not a good spot.
They all get hurt. Yeah. But then they all have incredible numbers, too. I don't know. Anyway, so he was the kid that got called up from junior to play in an NHL game, which was crazy. And now he is back in the NHL as an actual NHL goalie. He played his first game since that emergency call up when he was in junior for Ottawa against the Penguins. He made 48 saves in a win, which is pretty bonkers.
That's incredible. Cool. I think Andy would appreciate us talking about Dylan Ferguson.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I think he would, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's probably a good way for us to close it out. So thank you again to everybody who has been... I mean, I don't even know what else to say. I think we said it all at the top of the show, but...
It's still important, and you out there have helped me, and I think you can help Andy, too. So keep it going. He's got a tough road, and it's still hard for us, as much as we still having fun here. It's been a tough time, and it will continue to be tough for a while. So keep the positive vibes coming, and the support and even the emotional support for Andy and his family, and we need it too, in all honesty. So just keep it going, please.
Yeah. You know what it makes me think of, though, and I think there probably was a moment this week, John, where you and I both probably had it cross our minds that maybe we shouldn't do this podcast this week, or maybe we shouldn't write things on the website or whatever, just take a break. And to me, I think about the pandemic times, really dark times of the pandemic, when the only thing we really had was this podcast, right? And there are times
when the people connected to it.
Yep. Right? And there are times when I got on this podcast and I cried my eyes out, and kind of in retrospect, I was always like feeling a little embarrassed about that. And I am a very emotional person. So but it is cathartic, right, to get out and do this kind of thing. And I think that for those of you that love Andy, and you know, maybe you need to grieve a little bit too for what's going on right now. So hopefully we bring some comfort to you as you bring it to us. And this means a lot to continue to do this. And mm-hmm. It feels right to me to continue doing this, because I think that's what Andy would want.
Yeah.
So and we look forward to having him back as soon as possible. So that's that. I think we'll close it there. Thanks everybody again for your support. If you do want to donate, go to andyeye.com. It'll direct you right over there.
Yeah.
Either way, just keep sending those positive thoughts. So thank you all so much. Subscribe on Stitcher, subscribe on Spotify, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, leave your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. I'll read it on next week's show. And thanks so much. We'll talk to y'all soon for episode 233. Cheers.